thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders Episode 11. This is the podcast where we talk all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about Blake 7. This is Brian from Canada.
Hi, I'm Xander from London, England.
This is, of course, the second half of our original pilot episode of British Invaders, so let's get back to the discussion.
So, yeah, the series ended, but there have been some spin-offs to the series. In fact, there was a follow-up novel, which wasn't written by Terry Nation. It was written by the same author that also wrote an episode guide, an official episode guide. And this follow-up novel wasn't an official follow-on. And I think it was seen by Terry Nation, so it sort of had his stamp on it. It wasn't written by him. And it does sort of do what people might think he would do, is it brings back some of the main characters. Basically, it starts with Avon and Villa being alive on the same planet where the big shootout was, and then there is a rather odd plot involving them and a novel character who's brought in by the author, and you do get some cameos by some of the other characters as well. I think Tarrant turns up and someone else, I think, as well, but they don't make a big impression. And it's interesting just because you see, well, this is one version of what might happen next, but it's not, I don't think it's very good, quite frankly. So it's sort of a curiosity rather than something that you must read.
Did they explain what happened to Jenna?
Well, that's mentioned in the actual TV episode, isn't it? That Blake says that she ran one blockade too many or something, and implies that she got killed.
Blake tells Tarrant that she was killed, but we don't really know if that was true or not.
Yeah, I don't think she comes back. Sorry, it's a long time. I think I bought it at the time and read it at the time. I haven't read it since. And I don't remember who comes back. I know Tarrant comes back. He probably has one of the female characters with him. But that would be one of the season 4 female characters, not Jenna.
So Dana or perhaps Su Lin, who was in the fourth season, could have been in there.
And I think that was written as a sort of first novel of two, at least two. I think the author, I read an interview with him, had plans for a second novel, but for whatever reason, it was never commissioned beyond the first. He was never commissioned to write the sequel. So, but it does stand alone. It doesn't end like in the middle of the story. The sort of plot does sort of finish at the end. But there was apparently had more to write if he ever got paid to write it, but he didn't. And the other spin-off, the actor that played Avon. Paul Darrow wrote a book that was basically about his childhood and events up to the beginning of the actual series. I think it runs right up to him being on the prison ship and meeting Blake and co at the beginning of the series. And I've got it, but I haven't actually read it. But it's sort of, apparently it's sort of written in a very pulpish sort of quite violent action orientated style, apparently.
Well, it sounds like a different take on things, for sure.
Yeah.
There has also been a great deal of fan fiction out there,
of course,
that
yeah.
each taking their own approach to how they resolve what happened after the end of Series 4.
That's right.
In some cases, there were stun guns that were used, and, you know, a whole variety of things.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is that, well, the story, I think, is quite well reported, so I assume it's true, is that the actor that played Lake actually wrote into his contract when he came back that there must be blood. So there's absolutely no way that when he dies, they could possibly bring his character back. He didn't want to be involved in the series anymore for whatever reason. So you actually saw blood, and he's almost definitely dead. But all the other ones, you could probably say either they were wounded or they were stun guns or whatever. The other interesting thing, even with Blake, of course, is that in one of the early episodes, there's actually a clone of Blake created which survives the episode. So for fan fiction, I'm sure some of them must have used that clone of Blake as a way of bringing back Blake.
And
they want it.
So some of them probably said it was the clone of Blake who was shot in the chest several times, and the real Blake is still out there.
Well, that could be true as well, because he did behave a bit oddly. So, yeah, that is another way of explaining it. It wasn't a real Blake. And there were also two official novelizations of some of the episodes produced by the BBC at the time. I think there's one which is basically the first series, and I think there's one which is the last series. So they didn't novelize everything, but they have novelized sort of chunks for whatever reason. And the other thing that's happened since the TV series finished is there's been two official audio
with some of the original cast, I think.
With most of the original cast. I think they recast Dana and Sulin. They got recast, and they're all set during the original run of the series, so they don't add anything after the final death, so you don't get any sort of official version of events after the series. They're just extra events that happened between the episodes you saw on TV.
Now, this is the part of the show where we discuss some of the things in Blake 7 that we enjoyed or that we didn't like, and give a general feeling for what, apart from the events of what happened, what some of the highlights and maybe even some of the lowlights were. And one thing that I have to mention as being a very strong part of the series is the villains. Because while, yes, you have this overarching Federation that covers everything, especially in the first couple of seasons, you had a supreme commander of the Federation military called Servalyn. Servalyn was a woman played by Jacqueline Pierce, and she was a very strong, imposing character who was something of a fan favorite for being just very striking, partially with the close-cropped dark hair and often all-white clothing and so on. She was the type of character who was very laid-back and calm and almost removed from the situation, but at the same time could be terrifying in that she was willing to do almost anything, and that she was very much trying to bring things into her own favor personally. And she realized that Blake was a symbol. He knew how to attack strategically to bring public favor to him and build up this mythology and have that sort of strategic type of approach. She knew that Blake had to be removed because of this, and was constantly trying to chase down Blake as a purely expeditious type of exercise. And she was a very sort of striking, powerful character. And that was very interesting. And in fact, there was a second villain called Travis. He was like a sidekick to Servalyn, but he was a very different kind of character. He was much more physical and very direct and willing to attack basically at any time. For him, the vendetta against Blake was personal. When Travis was first introduced in the early part of season one, it was revealed that before the series and before Blake's memories were wiped, Blake had attacked Travis and nearly killed him. So this is why Travis wears, a sort of fully covering black outfit and has a big eye patch over one eye and is clearly damaged and has some prosthetic parts of his body at this point, including a prosthetic arm. And he had the hand of his prosthetic arm replaced with a gun, a weapon. So he has this weapon built into his arm. And he is going after Blake, and he is very personal about it. Those villains, for the first couple of seasons especially, Travis was only in the first two seasons, Servalyn was there for the whole series. And in both cases, they were sporadic, yeah. They weren't in every episode. They were very powerful as characters. It really added to the series and added a great flair to it.
Yeah, and even they had a falling out at one point as well, where they actually were Travis, due to his sort of blind following of trying to destroy Blake, got basically fell out of favour, and he was a hunted man at one point, and then Servland sort of did an underhand deal to sort of for them to work together. But
that's right. For most of season two, Travis is also a fugitive, but he still has this vendetta against Blake, and he's still trying to hunt down Blake with some mercenaries that he's hired. At one point,
that's right,
Servalan tells Travis that if he can take Blake out of the picture, then she will let him go. And
yeah,
that was
yeah,
a really neat part of things. Those two villains really added to the feel of the show.
Do you want to talk about favorite episodes and characters? For me, they sort of both go hand in hand. My favorite episode is one in the third season. They're called City at the Edge of the World, I believe, which features Villa as the main character, because Villa quite often is sort of a supporting character. He's an interesting character, and he often plays the comic relief and has some quite good lines, but that episode really features him as a major character, and he gets to be much more heroic in that episode as well. So that's why I like that episode, because he's probably my favorite character, although I quite like Avon as well, just because he has good lines and he has a nice sort of line in cynicism. How about you?
That episode also featured Colin Baker, who went on to play Doctor Who, featured Colin Baker as one of the villains, and featured Valentin Dial, who is a British actor well known for his deep, imposing voice, who has been on many British science fiction programs at different points.
Yeah, including Doctor Who.
Of course. That was definitely a strong episode in the third season, one of the few, although The Children of Auron was also in the third season, and this explained Callie, and it was sort of her big episode. And that was an interesting one, too, but yeah. I think my real favorite is the finale of Series 2. That was just a very strong episode.
Yeah.
And that, I think the highlights of the series for me were the end of Season 2 and the beginning of Season 1 when they're first introducing the series. Those were both very powerful parts of the series.
Yeah.
And I think it needs to be said that the first two seasons of Blake 7 were really quite strong when Blake was there. After Blake left, it wasn't the same.
Yeah.
And the third season was weaker. The fourth season was weaker still.
Yeah. Yeah. And the amount that Terry Nation wrote reduced over the years as well. Basically, the first season was byline to him completely, although I think he had help from the script editor, who's Chris Butcher. And the final season, he didn't write any of the episodes, and I think he wrote some of the episodes in between. But so that may be some indication of the quality and also the style changed over the years.
Well, it might, although certainly the characters had had a major impact on it.
Yeah.
I think it's also interesting to talk about the fact that the main characters in Blake 7 were the good guys, but they were not nice people. They were mostly convicted criminals. They were in many ways acting as terrorists. Certainly Blake had a terrorist kind of approach, you know. Fear and terror were a weapon that he used against the Federation, although freedom and achieving rights for people were definitely his goals. But the fact is, you had the good guys being sort of bad, but the bad guys being even worse.
Yeah.
And that lent to some of the darker texture of that series, which made it interesting and made it quite striking.
Yeah.
And what ties in with that, with thinking about the villains being even worse, was that the Federation was this sort of oppressive totalitarian regime based on a Stalinist model, which was an interesting approach. You know, in the very first episode, they have a show trial. You know, Blake is convicted on a show trial of crimes that have absolutely nothing to do with him.
Yeah.
And they go on and fill these things in a number of different ways when they convict him and essentially ship him off to the gulag. So it was a dark approach as your model for the villains of the series. we definitely need to talk about, shall we say, the limitations in the look of Blake 7. You had some interesting things to say about the budget and how it was set up, I think, Xander.
Yeah, it was basically, apparently, it was the slots which Blake 7 filled was previously occupied by a procedural police drama. And it apparently was given exactly the same budget as a procedural police drama. And one thing I found on the web was it was about £50,000 per episode, which, okay, that was in 1978, so that's worth a bit more now. But it gives you an idea of the small amount of money they had. And in fact, on one of the commentaries on the DVDs for the first season, they actually talk about the subject of the budget, and they said they blew most of the special effects budget on the prison ship sets, which were prominently featured in episode 2 and also were in a bit of episode 1 and episode 3. And obviously they had another 10 or so episodes to do, which obviously didn't have much budget left to do unless they managed to persuade someone to release some money. So the other thing that was mentioned on that commentary was the fact that they have very little incidental music. They have, apparently on the episode they were talking about, they had 9 minutes of incidental music for a 45 or so episode. And again, that was down to budget.
It tends to have the look in terms of the sets and the effects and the like of Doctor Who from the late 70s, when the later part of when Tom Baker was starring. That's the general type of look you're thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically the same, probably a lot of the same people doing it, quite frankly.
That's right. And unfortunately, this sometimes drives people away from series like this when they see cardboard sets that wobble all the time or rubber monsters being used, very, very mediocre spaceship visuals at times and things like that.
Yeah.
This is something that you get used to, and it's something that the British audience at that time didn't put the same type of priority on the visual look of things as you would have in the American audience or you have in today's audience.
Yeah.
And really what you have to say is, okay, the priority with this was the storytelling, the characters, and to some extent the acting. Focus on those things, you get past the fact that the look is limited. You just get used to that after you watch some of these things for a while.
Yeah.
I would say that the acting is a mix. Not all of it is great, but there is some very strong acting, certainly from Blake, Avon, and Villa, and from Travis and Servalin and characters like that.
Yeah.
There is some strong acting there, and the characters, certainly many of them are quite strong, and the storytelling is, I would say, uniformly strong.
Yeah.
So for those reasons, it's worth watching, despite its limitations.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't that those of us who like this don't notice that it's limited. We just don't mind.
Yeah.
We just know that those limits are there. And for the stories that they tell, it's worth watching anyhow.
Yeah, I mean, they do to a certain extent know their limitations. I mean, although it's a series about a bunch of people with a very powerful spaceship going around in space, there isn't really much space battle action at all. There are a few incidents which don't lead to much. And the main big incident we also already discussed is what happens between seasons. And I think the most interesting parts, as you say, are the when the characters are interacting, which is basically when they're on, a lot of the time it's on the main bridge set of the Liberator in the early seasons, and that's actually a quite nice set. And obviously that's a permanent set they had throughout, so I guess they spent more money on that. So that, I think that works well. And a lot of the planets, they use real location filming. There's quite a few things like oil refineries and things like that, and quarries for alien planets, which is, you know, a staple of Doctor Who as well. So again, that's not relying on building sets, which obviously building new sets for every episode would cost a lot of money. So they do try and work within the limitation.
And the fact that they sort of skipped over that large-scale intergalactic battle that happened between seasons 2 and 3, I thought that was a really neat way of handling it, that there's something huge that happens that you just don't see. You simply look at the aftermath. And I thought that was a wonderful approach to things. The result was a sort of minimalist feeling.
Well, it's almost like a literary device, isn't it? Because, I mean, in books that happens as they... The big events, you don't see the big events, you see what the results of the big events. So it's, you know, I think it works well.
That's absolutely true. It worked for Shakespeare, so certainly we can continue it with other things, and I think that worked quite well at times in Blake 7.
Run, Blake. Run. As far and as fast as you like. I'll find you. You can't hide from me. I am your death, Blake.
Something else I'll mention here that's just kind of a fun thing that never happened is the idea of a crossover between Blake Seven and Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Now, they never actually did one in either series, but what Terry Nation actually wanted to do at the end of season 2, when the Andromedans invade, he wanted to reveal that the invaders were actually the Daleks.
That's right.
This would have been a huge revelation that there is something in common between Blake Seven and Doctor Who, that maybe they're actually going on in the same universe.
Yeah.
I'm sure that would have made a big impact had they actually done it, and it would have been a neat device there. It would have raised lots of questions about what other crossovers could happen.
Yeah.
It would have been very interesting. In the end, it wasn't done because the BBC did not want to tie their two big science fiction series together.
Yeah. That's right.
So that was an interesting thing. I've also heard other possibilities mentioned, and I don't know if anyone working on Blake Seven at the time was actually talking about it. Blake would be going around on some planet, and the Doctor, who would have been Tom Baker, wandering around on some planet, and there would be a scene where the two of them run into each other and recognize each other because they already know each other.
Yeah.
The scene where they meet each other would be used in both series. And then they just move on and go into their own separate stories, and that would be that. Again, they didn't actually do this in Doctor Who or Blake Seven. So there were all kinds of ideas that have floated around. Another was the relationship to Star Trek.
Yeah.
Because the good guys in Star Trek are the Federation. The bad guys in Blake Seven are the Federation. It has been suggested that maybe they're the same Federation, and it just depends on your point of view.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the other thing is the similarity in the logos, because the Federation logo in the Blake Seven universe is quite similar to the Federation logo in the first series of Star Trek, but just turned on its side. So again, I don't know if the production designer was feeding off the Federation name. I can, it must have been. I can't believe it's a coincidence personally, but yeah, it seems to be almost a sort of flip side to the sort of utopian Star Trek view of the Federation.
It's time we really hurt the Federation. Oh, we've been hitting at the fingers, the arms. I want to hit at the heart. And the heart of the Federation is Earth.
Where exactly, or do you plan to take the whole planet?
There has been some talk in the past few years about doing a spin-off to Blake Seven, which is an interesting idea because it would be coming back to a series some 25 years later, using one of the original actors, setting the spin-off series 25 years after the end of the original series. And I think you know a little bit more about that, Xander.
A company which did a deal with Terry Nation's estate, because Terry Nation is now dead, and to get the rights to do more Blake Seven. And the plans that I read about were that they would potentially remake the original Blake Seven series, maybe as some sort of animation, whether that would be drawn animation or CGI animation, I'm not too sure. And then if that did well, they would actually make new live-action Blake Seven with Paul Darrow reprising his role as Avon, as I say, as an older Avon, to cover the fact that the actor has aged in the meantime, and build a new series around that character. The last thing I heard about this was that there was a creative falling out between the producers of this potential new property and Paul Darrow, and basically they had cited creative differences and split, and so Paul Darrow is no longer involved in the exercise, and things have gone very quiet since then, which rather implies that him jumping ship has put a spanner in the works, not surprisingly. I mean, I think officially at the time they said they would carry on without him, but I say I've heard absolutely nothing about it since. Their website does still exist, but it doesn't really talk about Blake Seven at all.
It sounds like the spin-off series will probably not happen, but it was an interesting idea. It was set to deal with Avon, who has been basically rotting in a prison for 25 years, having been basically forgotten about at that point.
Yeah, yeah, because they hadn't got a TV company behind it who actually wanted to show it.
That would be a problem. Now, something else that I want to mention, and I think we need to cover this for every older series, which is, what about a remake. If someone wanted to come back to Blake 7 and say, let's do a new reimagined Blake 7 series starting from the beginning, how would it play out? Would that be an interesting series? Would it be worth making? Would it be worth watching? What do you think about that?
Well, I like Blake 7, so anything new would be good. But I think the interesting thing it runs a problem of is that although it was probably the first to do a lot of the things it did, if someone produced it now, people who don't know the history of Blake 7 would see it as being derivative of things that are around now. Sort of the gritty space opera, what do you want to call it, is currently being done by Battlestar Galactica very successfully. And certainly there's elements of the original Blake 7 that are similar to that. So that's a problem. I mean, the sort of parallel example for BBC series is, of course, Doctor Who, which has been brought back. And sort of, I'm sure we'll discuss that more in other episodes. But the history of that really was that Russell T. Davis, the main writer and showrunner, although he's not called that, of the new series, basically created a name for himself as a good TV writer, and it basically said to the BBC, if you want me to work for you, I want to do Doctor Who. And that was sort of the deal he made. You know, if you want me to write this and other things, then the only thing, you know, Doctor Who is what I want to do, because he's basically a fan of Doctor Who. And that's really what kicked it off, I think, was that, you know, the BBC, the different personnel came in at the BBC who also wanted to do Doctor Who, and sort of it all came together very well, and they brought back Doctor Who. So if someone similar, with a similar drive behind them and probably reputation behind them as well, did the same to Blake 7, then it could happen.
I would agree with that. I think the key to bringing one of these new series into play based on an old series is to have a strong showrunner who wants to take a look at what's there and say, okay, let's do something new with this and take it and run with it. Something similar happened in American television with Battlestar Galactica with Ronald D. Moore.
That's right.
He took it and ran with it, then they did very well with it.
Yeah.
And I think that is the key, is to have a showrunner and to have some new blood involved. While you might have people who were involved in the older series, like Chris Boucher involved, obviously Terry Nation, who died about 10 years ago, obviously he couldn't be involved at this point, but some people who were involved in the original version could.
Yeah.
I think they would have to bring some new twist to it, bring something to it that is original now, and I don't know what that would be.
Nah.
What they did with Battlestar Galactica was to make it darker. Well, Blake 7 is already pretty dark.
Yeah.
While it could be made darker in some ways, and certainly could use updates in others, I think some new twist would have to be brought to it. And I think the key to it would be to have the strong acting and strong storytelling and strong characters that you had in the original series.
Yeah.
If you brought that to the fore again, I think Blake 7 could work now, because it really had some very strong elements which still work now. The story arcs that they were using, the season cliffhangers that they were doing, the darker approach to things, all of these things could still play well now. And we know that because they are playing well now in a number of other series that are doing some things that are similar.
Yeah, and obviously the whole thing about whether they're freedom fighters or terrorists is very topical with the current climate.
Absolutely. A similar question was brought into things in V for Vendetta.
Yeah.
That's one question that probably in a newer series they would want to bring more to the fore than it was before. So it's an interesting idea, and I think it's something that has potential and would work well if people wanted to pursue it. Now, just to wrap things up, Blake 7 was quite an interesting series that was about a band of rebels that were taking on this enormous galactic empire and trying to hit it where it hurts. It was about a group of characters dealing with each other and dealing with their situation, and it was a view of the far future in this type of dystopia where you have the Federation as the sort of evil empire of the piece that has control of almost everything. And that is basically what the series is about. As far as our recommendation, well, for my part, I think Blake 7 was a very strong series. The effects and the visuals were weak, but that's really something that you can get by and not worry about once you put your mind to it. I think the first two seasons were by far the strongest. The first two are worth getting and worth having in your collection for sure. The third and fourth seasons were interesting. I would say they're worth seeing. Probably seeing them once is enough. You may not need to add them to your collection. There are a few good episodes in those two seasons as well, but on the whole, they were weaker.
Yeah, yeah, I think I agree with all that. I mean, you already mentioned some of the good seasons from episodes from Series 3, and obviously the last episode is of the Series 4, which is pretty striking and worth seeing at least once just to know how it all ended and see how eventful it was. So I basically agree with what you said.
Well, thank you all for listening. This wraps things up. So this is Brian from Canada signing off.
And this is Anna from London, England, saying goodbye.